Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Carving It Up Live right here on Twitter, as well as the Carving It Up YouTube channel and the Grid Network YouTube channel. As always, I am Bryson Carver. Very excited to be with you on this Wednesday. It's Carving Up the Context Day, which we're going to be talking about Jamal Murray and why I was actually kind of a little upset. Not from a basketball fan perspective, but I'm going to be completely honest with you, as a Warriors fan. A little upset that Jamal Murray was not suspended for game three of the series, where the Nuggets, about to talk about that in just a second, are getting obliterated by the Minnesota Timberwolves. That in about a half hour. In 45 minutes, Bryson's best 10, top 10 players left in the NBA playoffs. Now, this is a list that compiles recent playoff performance, be it, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, as well as what you're doing right now. Top 10 players left in the playoffs, Bryson's best 10 in 45 minutes. Also, going to get into the New York Knicks, going to get into Jalen Brunson, why he's having one of the most impressive streaks, scoring streaks, that we've ever seen in NBA playoff history, that toward the end of the show, as well as why the Oklahoma City Thunder are in a very unique position. Again, youngest team in the playoffs by a long shot, but a very unique position to become the youngest team in NBA history to win a championship. I did pick the Dallas Mavericks. I still do feel good about that pick. I think Dallas, there's a key adjustment that the Mavericks need to make that they did make in the last series and throughout the second half of the regular season that I'll get into in about 10 to 15 minutes. Look at the comments. Patrick Brown says the Wolves are howling at the right time. Love it. What my Lakers should have done to Denver. You got to let go of the Lakers, Patrick. The Lakers weren't going to do diddly squat. Okay, they had 13 opportunities to do it the last 2 years, and they got it done one time. So I don't want to hear about the Lakers. This isn't about the Lakers, okay? Denver owns the Lakers. Just like the Wolves own the Nuggets. But first, I don't know if I don't want to be hyperbolic here, because that tends to permeate our sports media outlook on a number of things. I don't want to say, oh, this is the greatest thing or the worst thing I've ever seen. I don't want to do that. But I'm hard-pressed to think of many more times when watching an NBA playoff game when I was more stunned by absolute, complete domination, which the Minnesota Timberwolves were able to do to the Denver Nuggets on Monday night in Game 2 in Denver, Colorado, home of the defending champion Nuggets. Timberwolves 106, Nuggets 80. Minnesota led by over 30 at multiple points in that basketball game. Anthony Edwards, who I thought had kind of a quiet game through three quarters, came on at the end of the fourth quarter. Not that it mattered, because the Timberwolves were smoking Denver, but Anthony Edwards dropped 27 and 12. Karl Anthony Towns, Karl Anthony Towns dropped 27 as well. Cat dropped 27-12. Anthony Edwards dropped 27 with 7 assists. The Minnesota Timberwolves, Jaden McDaniels, everybody on the floor, Alexander Walker was excellent. Defensively, the Minnesota Timberwolves were great. And I want to kind of focus in on something that the Timberwolves, to their credit, are taking advantage of, that to my own fault, because I picked the Timberwolves stupidly to lose to the Phoenix Suns the first round, even though I didn't believe in Phoenix. Don't know why I did that. Yeah, we all have bad takes. And I picked Denver to take care of the Timberwolves in this series in six games because of the experience. I thought, you know, the whole, you know, matchup on Jokic was a little overrated. I still think the Rudy Gobert matchup on Jokic isn't going to have near the impact that a lot of folks think it will. The series is not over, but it's certainly tilting heavily in the Timberwolves' favor. But if you remember around All-Star break, and it was around the time that we had a second straight just god-awful All-Star game, and there was complaints to Adam Silver, how do you change the All-Star game, and all that. And if you remember, Adam Silver came out publicly, essentially, as well as you saw when the second half of the regular season began, the league started to officiate games a little differently. Like you saw early part of the season, teams were dropping, I don't want to say 140 points with ease, but you wouldn't be shocked if on a regular Tuesday night in Orlando, you saw a team drop 140. Although Orlando might be a bad example because they were great defensively, but awful offensively. So that probably didn't happen much, but you get the picture. The second half of the season, the refs kind of let them play. Didn't call a foul unless it was an obvious foul. Now listen, you had some games where it's, okay, there was more than enough contact that should have been called for a foul. Like we see that from time to time, but that's the case in any sport, basketball certainly included. But if you think about the first half of the season, really prior to the All-Star break, if I have the stat here, if you look at points per game in the National Basketball Association, what you're going to end up finding is the fact that, do we have the stat here? Prior to the All-Star break, teams averaged 115 points a game. Averaged. Whole league. These NBA playoffs, 104. 104 points a game, 11 points per game less with way better teams. They're letting him play more physical. They're letting him play, you know, again, a team like Minnesota that has a ton of length, a ton of athleticism, can kind of body up on you. The Denver Nuggets haven't been as used to that. If you look at last year's postseason run, they faced the Timberwolves. But if you remember, Rudy Gobert played the whole series. By the way, congrats to the Gobert family. I believe he is, if they have not had their first child, they are very close. So shout out to the Gobert family. I may be hard on Rudy. I'm still going to be hard on Rudy on the basketball court, but shout out to the Gobert family for the addition of little one. The Gobert was on Jokic and Jokic destroyed him. And Jaden McDaniels, if you remember, didn't play that series because in the last game of the regular season, there was an issue and he punched a wall, broke his hand or kicked a wall, something like that, and was out for the entire first round. So they faced a beat-up Timberwolves team and not as emotionally mature a Timberwolves team. Then they faced Phoenix, who doesn't play any defense at all. This is last season, much less this year. Then they take on the Lakers, who are an excellent defensive team, but Denver executes perfectly in the fourth quarter late in those games. Jamal Murray makes some shots. Jokic finishes them off in game four. And against the Miami Heat, the Heat played as well as they could, as hard as they could. Denver's just a better basketball team. Denver had more bodies. There was only so far Miami could take that series and the five games it ended up going. Then the first round, rematch with the Lakers, who were as good defensively, Denver took advantage. So I dismiss many of the basketball analysts who were like, hey, this could be a series where the Timberwolves are perfectly matched up to stop Jokic, which I still don't believe that's possible. I don't think you stop great players. You can certainly make it harder on them, which obviously the Timberwolves are doing. But because of how the league has officiated games, and for the record, I want to be completely straight with this. I love that. I think we have all reasonable basketball people want to see a sort of, not pickup like, because you want to be a little more organized than that, but you know, a game officiated to the level that, like, say, I say this as a former referee in this field, as an intramural game in basketball would be. You want to kind of let the players play, let the players decide the basketball game. Don't call a foul unless there's absolutely, obviously, and unequivocally a foul. Let them go. What we don't want is one of the two extremes, kind of like in politics, right? The far right drives me crazy. Far left drives me crazy for different reasons. We don't want 100 games that are 140 to 137. We also don't want games that are 75-72. Like that to me was the... In terms of how the game was officiated, in terms of, let's be honest, the skill at that point, the low bar of the NBA's history as it pertains to skill, at least post-merger. We want it somewhere in between. Again, 104 points per game on average. That's what you're seeing in the NBA, and that is what the Minnesota Timberwolves are taking advantage of. And it's rattling Denver. You have Michael Malone going darn near nose-to-nose with an official early on in the game when the game was still, I mean... It was like, I think it was like 11 or 12 to 7 Timberwolves. It was early on in the basketball game. Michael Malone didn't like a call, went to the official, went nose to nose with him. Shocked he wasn't ejected. Then you have the situation, which I'm going to talk about on carving up the context, develop a whole segment around it, is Jamal Murray not only throwing a towel at a ref, but throwing a heat pack at a ref. Jokic has looked off his game, has not played well in the first two games of the series. They're rattled. Minnesota's not only taken home court, which they went ahead and took care of that in game one, but they've completely taken control of the series. Now, the good news for Denver, they have not one, not two, but 3 days off before game three. The good news is for the Denver Nuggets, and these are the defending NBA champions. Let's not forget that. Let's not forget the fact that this was the second best team record-wise in the Western Conference, 157 games. If there's any team that can get up off the mat after facing adversity, I would think it would be the Denver Nuggets. They have time to sit in this, to hear the media, rightfully so, by the way, crush them for how they played the last couple of games, especially game two, getting obliterated by Minnesota. So that's where we sit here today. I would not be, I predicted a Denver blowout in game two. No Rudy Gobert, which on second thought, maybe they would have had a better shot if Rudy played. Neither here nor there. Should not have won defensive player of the year. Should have been Wemby. We'll put that aside. But I thought this could be a blowout where Minnesota, hey, we took care of home court. We not took care of home court. We've stolen home court. Game two, if we win it, great. If we don't, it's 1-1. Our worst case scenario, we go home 1-1. I think we'll take that. They said, F that. Let's go and take both games. In Denver, they take it to the Nuggets. The Nuggets do not even come close to matching their physicality. Now, again, the good news for Denver is two things. If there's any coach that's capable of making on-the-fly adjustments, it's Michael Malone. We saw it last year in the playoffs. We saw it throughout the Lakers series. This year, he's fully capable of doing that. This is not Darvin Ham. This is not Mike Budenholzer. This is not Doc Rivers. This guy clearly knows what he's doing. We've seen that the last couple of years. I'd argue prior to that, I mean, this is the same coach who led a Denver team 4 years ago to back-to-back 3-1 comebacks in the bubble. I get it was the bubble, but that's still a 3-1 deficit. It's very hard to come back from. Denver did it twice. So Michael Malone can make the requisite adjustments. The Nuggets are still, relatively speaking, healthy. And the good news is obviously the health, but Denver does have the bodies to be able to match the physicality of Minnesota. In theory, on paper, KCP, Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter Jr. I mean, Nikola Jokic is never going to be mistaken with Ben Wallace, but, you know, he's still a big body down low in the paint. So this series is not over, as some may be trying to say. I understand why people would imply that. Game three is a must win for Denver. They lose this, it's a wrap. They are not coming back from 3-0, because newsflash, nobody's come back from 3-0. And I don't anticipate Anthony Edwards going to be the first guy to blow that. But all that said, Minnesota has done a great job, and I give them, I've been hard on Minnesota this year. I haven't believed in the Timberwolves all year long, but I give them massive, massive credit for taking advantage of something that the NBA, in my mind, rightfully put in the sense that, hey, let's let the players decide the game. Let's not let soft officiating calls interfere with that. Like, nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to watch a basketball game with a million free throws. It's not good on television. It's not good for the flow of the game, for the energy of the game. So, listen, I think Adam Silver's the best commissioner in the NBA. I, in part, say that because I'm going to be kind of hard on him a couple segments from now in the Jamal Murray segment. Stay tuned for that. But I think, in general, that this is a great job by Adam Silver for instituting this at the All-Star break. The Timberwolves have the roster, have the overall personnel that can take advantage of it. And Chris Finch has done that, just that. With Minnesota, and Anthony Edwards has been easily the best player in the series. So shout out to the Timberwolves, man. I did not see this coming. Game one's one thing. To get smoked in game two and have to go to Minnesota down 2-0, that was shocking. I'm not going to lie. That was shocking. I mean, I saw people pick Minnesota before the series. I understood the pick, but this was, I didn't see this coming. Did not see this coming. And by the way, too, you know what? I'm not even going to mention the Lakers. Bryson, take the high road. Don't even mention it. I did want to transition, though, to the game last night. Game one, which was close-ish through three quarters, and then the home team pulled away at the end. That's the Oklahoma City Thunder hosting the Dallas Mavericks. Now, I picked Dallas to win this series in seven. I still feel great about that pick. More on a key adjustment I think Dallas needs to make and is capable of making, kind of like the Nuggets, later on in the series and later on in the segment. But Oklahoma City blows out the Dallas Mavericks 117-95. I said coming in that I thought this would be the best second-round series. Knicks-Pacers is going to be fun. We saw how game one went, more than the Knicks, and in particular Jalen Brunson at the end of the show. Denver and Minnesota, fun series, physical series. We'll see how it plays out, if the Timberwolves just destroy them or if Denver fights back the way that most champions do. Boston's going to destroy Cleveland, so that series is not going to last very long. This one will, though. Dallas and Oklahoma City. So starting with the team that won, Oklahoma City, with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who was excellent last night. The Oklahoma City, along with Minnesota, only two teams in the playoffs to have not lost a game to this point. But Shai Gilgeous dropped 29-9-9 on the night. Did so on relatively efficient shooting, 8-for-19. That's not terrible for a perimeter player. 2-for-4 from three-point range. Got help from Chet, who dropped 19. Jalen Williams, who I said would be the surprise player in the playoffs, dropping 18 points in this win. I'm still kind of waiting for, he's been good, but I'm kind of waiting for Jalen to really catch the eyes of the casual NBA fans as the playoffs roll on, because I think he's fully capable of doing that. I really, really like his game a lot. But Oklahoma City wins this one. They're the youngest team in the playoffs by a long shot. Their average age is like 23. Now, for context, if my notes serve me correctly, the youngest team in NBA history to win a championship is the 1977 Blazers. The average age of those players, 25 years, 126 days. The average age of the Thunder is 24 years, 293 days. So a little bit younger than, we'll do the math, about, basically a year younger than the 1977 Blazers, who are the youngest team to win a title led by Bill Walton. So normally, And I loved Oklahoma City all season long. I was one of the few that actually did have them as a contender despite their age, because I'm a big believer in SGA, as I just talked about Jalen Williams. I think Dagnall is an excellent coach, deserved winner this year, in my mind, for Coach of the Year. This is one of those years in the NBA, and we're certainly seeing with Denver, which I didn't think we necessarily see, where I felt like coming into the playoffs, we had two absolutely great teams, the Denver Nuggets and the Boston Celtics. I thought the Knicks were really, really good. I thought the Timberwolves were a touch overrated. Dead wrong on them. Timberwolves are a great team. Denver, you know, TBD. We'll see how this rest of the series plays out. I didn't think we had more than two, max three great teams in the playoffs. I thought a couple of years ago, 2022, there were multiple great teams. Phoenix, Golden State, Dallas, Boston, Miami, Milwaukee. Like, we had some great teams 2 years ago. Years past, 2013 playoffs, we had some great teams. I didn't feel like this was one of those postseason runs. And for that reason, I think Oklahoma City is more than capable of winning a championship this year. When you have a coach to the level of Mark Dagnall, where unless you face, well, Miami's out, unless you face, I guess, Denver, and we'll see if that even, if Denver even survives their series right now, they'll have the better coaching, they'll have the coaching advantage in virtually every single series that they play. Cleveland's not advancing, so we'll put them aside. And I think Dagnall's a little bit better than Bickerstaff. He's absolutely, in my mind, a better coach than Missoula and Boston. You look at the other series out in the Eastern Conference. I love Tibbs. I swear to you, I think I'm going to be right in this in the end. I still think the playing Josh Hart 47 minutes and playing your starters darn near the whole game is going to eventually catch up with them. I like the guy in Indiana. I forget his name. Oh my gosh, he won a championship in Dallas. His name is escaping my mind right now. Really good coach. Rick Carlisle, really good coach, but I would give Dagnall the advantage right now, given what he's done the last 2 years. Chris Finch has shocked me. I've been dead wrong on Chris Finch. I would still take Dagnall. So every series they play, Oklahoma City will have the better coach. They could have the better player. Now, I would take Ant Edwards over SGA right now, but it's not like it's crazy. I mean, SGA, they're going to announce the MVP. We're live and carving it up. They're going to announce the MVP in about 45 minutes. SGA is probably going to come in second to Jokic. Like, so it's at least a reasonable discussion, Anthony Edwards, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. After that, and what I love about this Oklahoma City team, given the fact that they've started 5-0 and dominated a team in Dallas that I said coming into the playoffs, I thought was the third best team in the NBA. And I'm not moving off that take. I still think Dallas is going to win. But it's the bliss of ignorance for the Oklahoma City Thunder. SGA has been in the playoffs twice in 2019 and 20. He was a kid, so we don't even count those years. As a great player in the NBA, this is SGA's first run. This is really all the guys in Oklahoma City's first run. There's the bliss of ignorance. They've never really been here before. Now, they'll face adversity. I think it'll be in this series. It would certainly, you would think, if they win, come in the conference finals against Minnesota or Denver. But if you've never been on a postseason run, you rolled through New Orleans in round one, which we all expected you to do. You took care of home court in game one, which I think most of us expected them to do, given the fact that Dallas 0-5 under Jason Kidd in game ones in seven-game series. In their mind, they're like, hey, this playoff thing, what do we got to lose? If the Thunder go out in round two, they're going to view it as a disappointing season. The players will, the fans won't, the media won't, I won't, but they will, because they're professional athletes, and anything short of a championship, you feel like, hey, could have done a little bit more. But when they have a chance, once the season's over, once their season's over, to kind of sit back if they don't win the championship and say, wow, youngest team in the NBA, youngest team in the playoffs by a lot. We're going to be right back in this situation. You have that kind of young talent. You have that kind of coach. You have that kind of superstar leading your basketball team. Yeah. I think this team can win the championship. They're excellent defensively. Lou Dort has always been, ever since, I remember watching Lou Dort was the 2019-20 season when Chris Paul was there. And I remember he was great in the bubble. He had a great game seven, if I remember correctly, against Houston in the first round of that series. Like, I've always loved Lou Dort. He can shoot the three. He's a tremendous perimeter defender. Guy's built like a dang, you know, tight end. He's a great athlete and did an excellent job. Luka Doncic did not have a good shooting night last night. Luka went 1-for-8 from three and 6-for-19 overall from the field, only scored 19 points. So Lou Dort did a great job. But again, it's the bliss of ignorance for this Oklahoma City Thunder team. And Dallas has been there and failed. Minnesota has been there and failed. Denver's been there and failed. Like, there is a, I mean, can I argue there's a little advantage for Oklahoma City? They don't know what it's like to fail. So like, the heck, let's just go guns a-blazing, you know, 100 miles an hour and do what we got to do. And as we see here today, they're 5-0 in the playoffs. They haven't lost, just like Minnesota. Minnesota's 6-0. So for Dallas, though, who, again, I maintain, I think they're going to win this series because I think they're the best player in the series. And Jason Kidd, while he's not Dagnall, I think he's a tremendous head coach. So Dallas losing game one was, I don't think, shocking to anybody because the fact that, again, as I just mentioned, Dallas is 0-5 in game ones under Jason Kidd. That said, I didn't love how they approached this game because it reminds me a little bit how they started in the Clippers series. And it's like in life. Getting rid of bad habits takes time. Doesn't matter what the bad habit is. It takes time to move off of it. It takes repetition. It takes a lot of mental toughness. But eventually, if you're able to put those things together, you can move off of it. It could be anything. Dallas coming into this year, I think the notion around them, and I think it was a correct notion, is they are a bit too Luka Doncic, you know, on-ball-centric, two-ball on-ball-centric type of offense, and defensively leaves a little too much to be desired. And again, my biggest weakness for the Mavericks coming into the playoffs was I thought their two guards, Luka and Kyrie, who both had great years and really good playoffs, especially Kyrie, would be exposed on the defensive end, eventually in the playoffs. But what I loved about what Dallas did in the second half of the season, obviously they added Daniel Gafford. You had the kid Lively, Derek Lively from Duke, who I loved out of college and has been a really, really good add for Mark Cuban and this Mavericks organization. They've stepped it up on the defensive end big time. I remember talking about game two when Luka shut down. Literally, I mean, the numbers back it up, shut down the Clippers' big three, be it Kawhi, Paul George, and James Harden. Shut them down on ball. So we've seen he's capable of doing that. Not saying he's going to shut down SGA, but he can take SGA if need be as the series wears on. But more importantly than that, because defense, let's be honest, a lot of defense, sure, you got to have the personnel, see the Minnesota Timberwolves. But if you look at the Timberwolves, yes, they have the personnel, but they also have the grit, the toughness, and the mental fortitude to just get in your head and be aggressive and just agitate you for 48 minutes. Dallas has shown they're capable of doing that. So I'm not worried about that. What I want to see more of, though, is up tempo, playing free, playing with speed, getting out in transition. Now, some of that you got to give credit to Oklahoma City because Lou Dort took Luka Doncic a lot of out of his comfort zone throughout that basketball game. But if you watch Dallas's offense to start the Clippers series, which they won, of course, and to start this series, it's kind of been, to use the great Charles Barkley's term, dribble, 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 dribble. What he used to say about James Harden. That's kind of what we're seeing from Luka. That's kind of what we're seeing from Dallas, and it puts the offense in a complete standstill. Now, the loss of Maxi Kleba is massive, I think, because he's a great spot-up shooter and can play the five if Dallas wants to go small in the series, which they might have wanted to, and have Maxi Kleba go against Chet Holmgren at the five. But I still think that they're capable of doing that because they have so many spot-up shooters, because Kyrie has been awesome this year in the postseason on and off ball, which is part of what makes Kyrie such an efficient scorer. So just playing up tempo, stop going just Luka, 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 move the basketball. Luka's going to get his, Kyrie's going to get his, but I think that's the thing I want to see from the Dallas Mavericks moving forward in this series. Patrick, Denver can't play their B-plus game and expect to win. I love the Wolves defense. It was incredible. I thought Minnesota, the tenacity they brought to that end of the floor was, because listen, you can have the personnel, the Clippers have the personnel, but you're not always sure if their mind's in it, right? So, yeah, major kudos to the Minnesota Timberwolves. They were the number one team in the NBA defensively all season long. But holding a Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, Denver Nuggets offense to 80 points at home? 80 points at home in 2024. That is, keep in mind, as I mentioned earlier, average points per game in the playoffs, 104 per game by teams in the playoffs. Denver held a 24 points under that. That is amazing. Kudos to the Timberwolves. Oh, dang, this sucks. Apparently, according to Shams, Thanasis, I want to emphasize that, Thanasis Antetokounmpo has torn his Achilles and will undergo surgery. How did he tear his Achilles? Dang. So, listen, I've been, well, certainly my counterpart, Barry Grant Jr., but I do co-sign him, has been hard on the Bucks and on Giannis to agree, like, Thanasis really isn't good enough to be on the team, but it's a Giannis thing, which, again, I get it for a small market. I don't know if the Lakers, the Knicks, the Heat, you know, Philadelphia, big markets would go for that. But Milwaukee, they're not going to get a player of Giannis' caliber. It's the very reason I think Giannis should leave this offseason and will leave this offseason. Only time will tell if they're willing to do that. But very, very interesting. So this sucks, though, for Thanasis to tear his Achilles like that. No question. Oh, I thought we had breaking news. My bad. I read that wrong. Let's transition now, though, to carving up the context. So carving up the context is a context, if I can speak today. It's a segment we do every Wednesday, about 30 minutes of the show. We're doing it a little earlier today. About 30 minutes into the show. And essentially what that means is I look at a story, a headline, something that happened in a game, a comment somebody made. It can be anything. And try and go a little deeper, you know, put on my investigative hat, my journalism hat, if you want to call it that way, even though I'm not a journalist, and try and look a little deeper, carve out the context of the situation at hand. And this is a really fascinating one. So we're going to go back to the Denver-Minnesota series. So I focused on Minnesota a lot, and I want to focus on Denver right now, and in particular, the second best player on their team, a kid by the name of, he's not really a kid anymore, but a guy by the name of Jamal Murray. So as the head coach of the Colorado Buffaloes, primetime Deion Sanders says, give me my theme music. On this week's edition of Carving Up the Context, we're going to be talking about Denver Nuggets star Jamal Murray, who was fined yesterday $100,000, $100,000, which for most of us would be like, holy crap, for Jamal Murray, of course, for a professional athlete, an NBA player, specifically, it's not a deal breaker. Although $100,000, I mean, it puts a dent in your in your pocket, even if you're an NBA player, unless you're a billionaire like LeBron James. The point is, game two, Nuggets hosting the Timberwolves, massive game for Denver. You want to try and tie the series up and not go down 0-2, losing your first two home games. But that occurred. Denver lost, and in the midst of it, early on in the game, fueled by in part the physicality that the Minnesota Timberwolves showed throughout that basketball game. Jamal Murray, when the action was on their side of the court, when he was on the Nuggets bench on that side of the floor, threw a towel at the feet of a ref. The ref didn't see it. Okay, well, in Jamal Murray's mind, he's like, okay, I missed him. I didn't hit him, I guess, which I don't know what damage a towel is going to do if you throw it at him and make contact. The issue is you could slip on the towel. Jamal says, I'm going to do one better. I'm going to throw a heat pack at the ref, which evidently, I guess I didn't see that either. And so it was under a lot of scrutiny on social media. Even the TNT crew brought it up. Reggie Miller, Jamal Crawford, Kevin Harlan brought it up. And it's been the topic of conversation in the ensuing 48 hours since that game. Discussion about, should Jamal Murray be suspended? Should he not? What's the bar between, okay, he didn't hit anybody, but it really could have injured somebody if they slipped on the towel, God forbid. Carl Anthony Towns, I think it was the heat pack that Jamal Murray threw. It might have been the towel, but I think it was the heat pack. Carl Anthony Towns, who stands 6'11", 7 feet tall, you know, really athletic, big, was very, very close to the heat pack, could have easily slipped on that thing, and God knows what would have happened after that. It's a situation that could have easily led to an injury to a Timberwolves player, a Nuggets player, an official, somebody else, a coach maybe. So I was really, really conflicted about this in the immediate aftermath. Because my thing is, okay, on one hand, you have this fascinating story. Defending champion Nuggets, down 0-2, going to Minnesota in Game 3, like the ultimate must win. What do you have in me? You didn't get smoked in Game 1, but you certainly got thoroughly outplayed in Game 1, and you got absolutely humiliated in Game 2 on your home floor. I think at some points the Denver crowd actually booed the Nuggets. This is the ultimate, okay, do you have the heart of a champion type of game? And for that reason, I'd really like to see Jamal Murray out there with Jokic, and let's see what the champions have got. And then on the other hand, it's, yeah, he also threw a towel at a ref, could have easily slipped on it, and said, you know what? I'm going to do you one better. I'm not going to throw a heat pack. So he throws two things separately at an official that could have injured an official, injured a player, injured a coach, could have injured anybody. On that hand, I'm like, okay, that can't go without some sort of significant punishment. Now, if you want to make the case $100,000 is, okay, I won't disagree with you there. But after thinking about it, and I want to see Jamal Murray out there, and by the way, he's going to be out there, he should have been suspended. And the reason I say that is this. As I mentioned earlier, he did not throw one thing, he threw two things. Also, too, I was thinking about other guys who have gotten suspended. I was thinking about somebody like a Draymond Green, who his team, if you remember, lost game two. This is just a year ago to the Sacramento Kings. My Golden State Warriors went down 0-2 to Sacramento, and Draymond Green was involved in an incident with Domantas Sabonis, where Draymond got the board, Sabonis grabbed his ankle, Draymond, and again, I said immediately after, should have done this, but Draymond tried to free himself and stomped on Sabonis' ribcage. Got ejected for that game, and I said, hey, he absolutely should get tossed. You can't do that. But my thing is, okay, come on. It's 0-2. It's the defending champions. I want to see Draymond Green a must-win game for the Warriors. The NBA said, no, we are going to suspend him. Why are we going to suspend him? Because of his history. Well, that's interesting. Joel Embiid, and I brought this set up numerous times, has two more flagrant fouls than Draymond Green. One more flagrant foul than Draymond Green in the postseason in a third of the games played. Interesting they don't suspend Joel Embiid for his history, but they suspend Draymond Green. Well, Bryson, what's history got to do with it? Jamal Murray doesn't really have a history. Yeah, you're correct. He doesn't have a history. Did DeJounte Murray have a history? See, we forget this because the series ended up being kind of irrelevant because the Hawks a year ago never had a chance against the Celtics. But if you remember, Jamal Murray was arguing a call with an official. This was game four in Atlanta, Hawks-Celtics. Jamal Murray didn't like a call from a ref, got in the face of the ref, made contact with the ref, got thrown out, and was suspended for game five. Now you could say, well, Jamal Murray didn't make contact. Well, he easily. Not only do I think he could have injured a ref, we'll be kind today. He at least was intending to make a point to the ref by throwing something, my bad, two somethings separately at the feet of an official because he didn't like how the game was being officiated. What's the difference in that in DeJounte Murray? What's the difference in that for your team down 0-2 and Draymond Green, who's down 0-2? Because if they didn't suspend Joel Embiid for a history of unsportsmanlike acts, which again, can I remind you again, more flagrant fouls in a third of the games played in the postseason than Draymond Green, but it is Draymond who gets the suspension. You suspend Draymond, his team's down 0-2. You don't suspend Jamal Murray when his team is down 0-2. Even though Jamal Murray doesn't have a history, neither did DeJounte Murray, and he made contact with an official. And he got suspended. And to me also, the potentially dangerous aspect of this, and again, I want to emphasize something I said earlier when I was talking about how the games are being officiated in the playoffs, because I love it. And I think Adam Silver has been the ultimate, if something doesn't work, we're going to fix it. The low management rule, the 65 game threshold. When Adam Silver detects a problem in the NBA, he's quicker than any commissioner in any league. Goodell is close, but to fixing the problem almost immediately that next offseason. And that's why I love Silver. It's what drives me insane about Rob Manfred. Drives me crazy. But this to me is a little bit of a weak spot in Adam Silver in terms of the inconsistencies with punishments that are levied out. Because Jamal Murray threw a towel and then threw a heat pack at a referee, and all he got, but he did get a $100,000 fine. By the way, Rudy Gobert did something else in the regular season that Jamal Murray did in the last game, and that's do the money sign to the referee. Rudy got, I believe, suspended, if I'm not mistaken, in the regular season. I could be wrong on that. I know for a fact he got a hefty fine. Other players, be it this year, be it in the future, could see that, could throw something at a ref, again, depending on whether the guy or woman sees that or not, and say, hey, Jamal Murray got away with it. You're going to suspend me? Well, Jamal Murray. So it sets, I don't want to say a dangerous precedent, but a rough precedent for the NBA. I mean, we've seen, again, different commissioner, I understand that, David Stern, but we've seen guys leave the bench, which is the ultimate no-no. I understand that anytime there's an altercation on the floor, but we've seen guys leave the bench and get suspended. A guy throws something from the bench? Again, hitting somebody with a towel is not going to hurt them. But them slipping on it, oh, absolutely, that can injure them. Badly, I might add. A player, a coach, a referee. Basketball's a fast sport, up and down, especially the NBA, especially the NBA playoffs. Fast, up and down, transition. If somebody were to go up for, if Anthony Edwards were to go up for a dunk and a towel is right there and he slips and blows his knee out, oh my God, now the biggest star of the playoffs is gone because of your reckless act, Jamal Murray. So again, it not only sets, and it not only is inconsistent with previous rulings by the NBA, it sets a bit of a dangerous precedent. I could throw a towel. I can throw, you know, if I wanted to throw a, gosh, I don't know, what's, I don't know, if I want to go full Bobby Knight and throw, let's not even go full Bobby Knight and throw chairs. Let's say if I threw a cushion of a chair at the feet of a ref. Now, again, that's more solid and hard than like a towel is, but Jamal Murray got away with it, and he threw two things. I don't know. I want to see Jamal Murray in game 3. Like, a part of me is still like, I'm glad he's out there because I want to see the Nuggets at full strength going 1,000 miles an hour at the Timberwolves. Let's see how the champs respond. But on the other hand, you weren't really consistent in the past. And we'll see if you're consistent in the future. Only time will tell, but it could set a dangerous precedent. So, for this week's edition of Carving Up the Context, the Jamal Murray punishment, I don't love it. Let's see. Patrick. Nuggets were down 30 points at one time. Their emotions got the best of them. Murray should have been suspended one game. If that were Draymond, better believe it happens. Yeah. And for the record, I defend it. I mean, if Draymond gets suspended a year ago for that situation with his team down 0-2, I'd say, well, at least the NBA is being consistent. I mean, at least everybody, I mean, you know, and by the way, the Warriors did go on to win that series and win that you know, subsequent game 3. But one thing, too, as well, before we get out of here, or not get out of here, but leave the segment, is this is online for Denver. And again, we'll see how the champs respond. I think they'll respond well because they have a great coach. They have a great basketball team. This might be ever. So 2003 is the first year that they instituted a 7-game series in the first round because it used to be best of 5. Way back in the day, it used to be best of 3. So since 2003, when every series is a best of 7, this Denver series might be en route to being one of the weakest title defenses we've ever seen in the last 21 years in the NBA. We can put it this up. To me, these are the 5 weakest title defenses in the NBA since 2003. The 07 Heat, after winning the title, swept in round 1. 2012 Mavericks, same thing. 2021 Lakers lost in 6 in the first round, but in the Lakers' defense, AD missed a lot of time. LeBron wasn't totally healthy. Like, you can make a case, well, the Lakers weren't full strength. 15 Spurs lost in 7 games the first round. But if you remember, that's when Chris Paul, contrary to popular belief, Chris Paul's pretty good in the playoffs, hit almost a buzzer-beating game winner to beat the team. Like, the Spurs were as close as you can humanly be to winning a series when losing a series. 2011 Lakers swept in round 2 by, I guess that was Dallas in the second round. I think it was Dallas in 2011. If Denver goes out in 4 or 5 games and the series continues to look like this, this will go down shockingly as one of the weakest title defenses we've ever seen. And it goes back to what I said after last year and throughout parts of this year. Anytime the word dynasty is brought up, I'm like, let's slow down. Come on. Dude, I think they were the best team in the NBA all season long? You betcha. Did I think it was likely that they could repeat? No question. I still don't think it's out of the question. But there's a reason that, if you look at back-to-back champions, Steph Curry, Warriors, LeBron, Heat, Kobe, twice. Kobe did it in 2009 and 2010 and did it with Shaq from 2000 to 2002. MJ went back to back, or sorry, MJ three-peated twice. Isaiah Thomas with the Pistons, Magic and Kareem with the Lakers. Like, you look at back-to-back champions, and that's not to take a shot at Jokic necessarily, but it is sort of a, if Denver goes out, are we going to give them, and in particular Jokic, who I've come around on, the same energy that we would give a Steph Curry, a LeBron James? I mean, we, and I was one of them, absolutely crushed Kevin Durant for getting swept again by Minnesota. Denver goes out in a sweep or a gentleman sweep to the Timberwolves. We can be as hard as on Jokic. Because me, either we have to be as hard on Jokic or we have to rescind some of our criticism of KD. We got to do one of those two because we can't criticize KD and let Jokic off the hook. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, I think Denver's going to respond well in game three. I do. I don't think the series is over. If Denver has any sort of heart of champion left in them, they have 3 days to sewer over this, to sit in the stench that they have created for themselves and respond on the road. But if they don't, this is one of the worst title defenses we've ever seen. It really is. I'm just throwing that out. Like, take this from a fan of a team that put together a nice long dynasty. Ain't as easy as the Warriors made it look. I'm just saying. Ain't as easy as old Steph Curry made it look. I'm just throwing that out there. Which, by the way, Jokic in, and we'll bring it to you, like, I think inside the NBA is going to announce it, is the MVP, which should be announced, I guess, prior to, is Knicks-Pacers the only game tonight, am I correct? So in that case, inside the NBA probably tips off then at 7:30. If I can look that up right here real quick. I don't know why I just went Southern right there. I'd like to do it live on the show, see what the MVP results are. And I'm sure Shams will report it, but I'm curious what the MVP results will be. So, okay, so yeah, inside the NBA does not tip off till 7:30. So we may be done with the show until then. So on with the show. The show must go on, as the great Bill Shakespeare once said. So I always, coming into the playoffs, I do it with quarterbacks in the NFL, do it with players in the NBA, because I think quarterbacks obviously have the most impact of any player on the field in the NFL. And NBA players, again, there's only five guys on the floor. It's similar. So I do a top 10 players in the NBA coming into the playoffs, and then I do one exiting the playoffs because it almost always looks not completely different. Some guys stay, some guys rise, some guys fall. You generally see the same names, but you could see some new ones. Spoiler alert, you're going to see some new ones after this year's playoffs, be it Anthony Edwards, SGA, Brunson, potentially anybody else. We'll talk about Brunson, by the way, in about 15 minutes. But we're midway through the playoffs. Steph didn't make it. KD got swept. LeBron and AD got gentlemen swept. Embiid is gone. I mean, you look at the guys that have they're out of the playoffs. Like, man, these are really, like, elite basketball players gone. So we have 10 guys, in theory, left to go into my top 10 currently in the playoffs. These are guys, I want to, you know, be completely honest, that are still in the playoffs. So go ahead and rank them. So if I can get the background music ready to go right now, get the background music going to rank my top 10 players. It will start at number 10. The 10th best NBA player left in these playoffs is Karl Anthony Towns. Cat is the best player left in the NBA playoffs, and here's why. So the guy's averaging about 20 points a game, 9 rebounds, which you'd like it to be a little higher for a guy of his size and stature, but Cat has always been more of a spot-up shooter. I am really impressed with the fact that he missed a lot of time due to injury. I think about 16 games, comes back at the end of the regular season, and we saw it with Brandon Ingram with the Pelicans, never really found his rhythm after coming back late in the year. Like, a lot of times you come back late in the season, a team has kind of built a rhythm without you. You want to be playing your best basketball at the end. Cat struggled a little bit out the gates, but is back on. He dropped 27 and 12 the other night in game two against the Denver Nuggets. Like, he's played very, very well in this year's playoffs. He's a 40% shooting big. He's an efficient big. Again, not the type of down low presence that we expect a lot of centers to be, but that's never really been his game. So we have to accept him for what he is, the role he plays to the Timberwolves, and that's why I've got Cat as the 10th best player left in these NBA playoffs. At number 9, the number 2, who at times is playing like the number 1 on the Boston Celtics, it is Jalen Brown, Jaylen Brown, the ninth best player left in the NBA playoffs, and here's why. So offensively, he's been the best player for the Celtics in the postseason. He's averaging 24 and 6, six assists this year. I'm sorry, six rebounds this year in the postseason. Jaylen has shot very well from three. He's good off the dribble, you know, at least going to his right hand. The left hand, I know some people try to portray it as like this false narrative. It's a thing. He seemed to improve it as time has gone on, but whether or not Jaylen Brown can consistently beat you off the dribble going left still remains to be seen, especially as the Celtics go deeper in the playoffs. I think they're going to wax Cleveland just like they waxed Miami. As I said about the Celtics coming into the playoffs, they shouldn't have more than two losses going into Eastern Conference Finals against either Indiana or against the New York Knicks. But Jaylen Brown has been a guy who, listen, we've seen a lot of playoff games where Tatum has been amazing and other games where, okay, the number two guy, the Robin to Batman is going to have to pick up the load. Jaylen Brown's done that time and time again. Celtics really haven't faced any adversity. If you want to say losing the home game to the Heat, but we all knew Boston's way better. They're going to win this series. You know, as great as Spoelstra is, he just didn't have the bodies to compete with Boston or the talent to compete with the Celtics in that series. Jaylen Brown's been really good. That's why he is my ninth best player left in these playoffs. At number eight, a team I hate. Didn't need for that to rhyme. Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell, the eighth best player left in this year's playoffs, and here's why. So if you look at his numbers, he's averaging 29, 5, and 4 in these playoffs. But 29, you're like, wow, Donovan Mitchell's showing up and showing out. Some of that is a little skewed because he, and to his credit, I want to take credit away from him for doing this. In game 6 and 7, went crazy. Dropped over 50 in game 6. I believe dropped about 40 in game 7 to lead the Cavs. By the way, down at 1.18 to the Orlando Magic against a great Magic defense, a limited Cavs offense. Didn't think Cleveland would come back. I was proven wrong. They did. Donovan Mitchell has, again, I've been critical of him in the 22 and 23 playoffs, but prior to that, this is a guy who has 50-point playoff games on his resume. This is a guy who has you know, outplayed prime Westbrook in playoff series. He's gone back and forth, outplayed Jokic in series. Like, this guy is by and large showed up when his number is called in the postseason. Can he, again, this Cavs are beating the Celtics, but could he push it to a game 6? I'd be impressed if he did. Donovan Mitchell, the eighth best player left in this year's playoffs. At number 7, the number 2 guy on the Dallas Mavericks, it is Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving, the 7th best player left in this year's playoffs, and here's why. So he's averaging 25, 5, and 4. This is a guy who I've consistently said has the greatest. I love Steph Curry. He's my favorite player ever. Kyrie's got the greatest handle I've ever seen in my life. I've been critical of Kyrie off the court in the past, but I've always said he is one of the most efficient small players in NBA history. I mean, he's a 50-40-90 guy. He's a great three-point shooter. Obviously can get whatever he wants off the dribble. I think he's the greatest non-dunking finisher among guards in NBA history. Like, again, as far as skill, you could maybe put Kyrie in the top 10 of all time. I'm dead serious on that. Now, it hasn't always, you know, come out to great production in the playoffs, at least with him being the number one guy. The good news is, he's not the number one guy. Everybody knows the man in Dallas is Luka. So Kyrie's sort of being able to play the same role that he played in Cleveland when the Cavs won a title in 2016 is really incredible. It's amazing to me that if you look at the 8 teams left in the playoffs, among superstars or even stars, Kyrie is the oldest guy, and he's barely into his 30s. It just goes to show you, like, the guard, I'm not saying LeBron and Steph and KD have totally passed the mantle, but they are in the process of doing so with some of these younger players. So the fact that Kyrie is like the old guy is really weird. But Kyrie's been great in these playoffs. He had an awesome game 4 against the LA Clippers, albeit they lost, but Kyrie has been really good. I'd like to see the Mavs getting more involved in this series. Kyrie Irving, the 7th best player left in this year's playoffs. At number 6, the guy he lost to just last night and is playing in this series, it is the guy who's probably going to finish 2nd for league MVP, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, SGA. The 6th best player left in this year's playoffs, and here's why. So he's averaging 27, 6, and 6 this year in the postseason. He is, again, we talk about efficiency. He's been an efficient player, over 50% from the field this regular season. A very good case can be made that he's league MVP, as I just mentioned. The guy, again, was top 2 in scoring, top 3 in scoring this season, leading the youngest team in the NBA to the postseason, doing so, again, with a lot of young guys around him. Giddey, Holmgren, Jalen Williams, Lou Dort, very, very young Oklahoma City team, coached by an excellent coach and Mark Dagnall. But SGA has been awesome this year, took care of the New Orleans Pelicans quickly. If SGA had the playoff history of like a, I don't know. Let's say this is 2019. Of a Klay Thompson, he might be in my top three or four because, again, we know what Game 6 Klay was. Part of me is just living in the past. As a Warriors fan, I try not to do that. But the point is, SGA has been great. If he had more of an extensive playoff history in recent years, again, not all that's his fault because he's young and the Oklahoma City Thunder were rebuilding. I think this guy and this team has the potential to really, really be dangerous over the next decade. Young talent everywhere. Sam Presti is one of the best executives, I think, in sports. There's not that many people, again, in professional sports that knows how to accumulate young, talented guys, put them together, be able to mesh them together, put together a requisite roster that can go deep in the playoffs. Oklahoma City, again, as I said earlier, we don't have that many truly great teams in this year's playoffs. Doors open for the Thunder to become the youngest NBA championship team of all time. We'll see if they're able to do it. But their leader is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and he is my sixth best player in this year's playoffs. At number five, we move the top five. To me, one of the most weirdly underrated players in the NBA. I've been a fan of his for a long time. It is Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum, the fifth best player in the National Basketball Association in these playoffs that is still playing, and here's why. So, again, as I said coming into this segment, this is a mix of what you've done in this year's playoffs as well as what you've done recently. So within the last 2 to 3 years in the postseason, Jason Tatum's been great. Took a team to the finals after being first team All-NBA in 2022. He got a team to the conference finals after once again being All-NBA in 2023. Doing so, mind you, with the second 50-point game 7 in NBA history to eliminate the Philadelphia 76ers. This is a guy, if you look at his numbers when facing elimination, one of the better players, I'm not kidding, in history when facing elimination. Efficient, great scoring outputs, excellent defense. And that's really what I want to focus on, because Tatum, if you look at his numbers, only, you know, again, shooting percentage isn't good, didn't play that well the other night. 21 points with 10 rebounds, 5 assists. He's getting other guys involved. You see the 10 rebounds. He has a defensive rating, folks, of 100. That, my friends, is remarkable. Absolutely remarkable for a star player, superstar player, which I believe Tatum to be in this year's playoffs. We'll see if he's first team All-NBA for a third straight year. There's a potential chance that he could be. I would vote him to be in that position. Tatum's been, again, if you're asking Tatum to be Jokic or prime LeBron, or he's not that. But is he at the very tip top of tier two? You better believe it. I think he's one of the five best players left the playoffs. Gets over-criticized, beyond over-criticized as far as I'm concerned. Jason Tatum, the fifth best player left in these NBA playoffs. At number four, if you're playing a slightly better, I'll move him higher, but this is where I've got him right now. It is Luka Doncic. Luka Doncic, the fourth best player left in this year's playoffs, and here's why. So Luka's numbers, it's like Luka's not been as good, but you're still like, dang, it's... numbers still look pretty good, 28, 9, and 8, which comes somewhat close, not the points per game, but somewhat close to his regular season averages. Listen, this is somebody, I get he's had the knee injury, but to his credit, has been really committed to the defensive end, had a great series on that end of the floor against the Clippers. Would like to see him be a little bit more impactful on that end as the series goes on against the Oklahoma City Thunder. But let's not forget, folks, this is a guy who, in closeout games, averages well over 30 points per game, basically like a 30-point triple-double in closeout games. If he, again, Oklahoma City, make sure this puppy doesn't get to a game 7. Make sure, if you're going to beat the Mavericks, do it in 5 or 6. Don't let it get to a game 7. This guy is more than capable. We've seen his history of absolutely obliterating you in the 7th and decisive game or in any closeout game of any kind. Luka's improvement on the defensive end, Luka's over the course of the second half of the season and over the duration of the Clippers series, we'll see what happens in this series, but his commitment to playing more of a team-oriented style of basketball. Listen, a guy who a lot of people think is the greatest player ever, Michael Jordan, scored a lot of points, won MVPs, won scoring titles, but he didn't start winning NBA titles until he committed to, again, the triangle offense and with Phil Jackson, Tex Winter. But again, committing to more of a team-oriented, move the basketball, more of an up-tempo style. That is exactly what the Dallas Mavericks have employed. We'll see if they do. I believe they will. Luka Doncic, the fourth best player left in this year's playoffs. Some may think I have him too low. Some may think, not too high. I don't think anybody thinks I have him too high, but I'll make a case. And number three, third best player left in the playoffs is Nikola Jokic. Nikola Jokic, the third best player left in the postseason, and here's why. So again, the man is averaging 27, 15, and 9. So he's been on a three-game stretch. I didn't think he played great in game 5, the closeout against the Lakers. He has not played well at all the last two against the Timberwolves. And again, that to me factors in at this point, I think you can kind of guess who the top two are above Nikola Jokic. But I think when you look at his overall playoff production, it's been really good in stretches and not that impactful in others. Like, the numbers are still there. But again, it reminds me a lot of Jokic's 2022 MVP season, where it's numbers look good, but the, you know, get absolutely mopped by Golden State. I mean, sure, he's the MVP. It reminds me of that a little bit now. Again, Nikola Jokic, in general, I still give him the title best player in the world. If they get knocked out in round two, we'll see if someone like an Anthony Edwards were to strip that title. Only time will tell. But listen, this is a guy who is a triple-double threat every night, is an efficient triple-double threat every night, gets his teammates involved. The entire Nuggets offense is fixated around his strengths and his abilities. Again, I think Denver's going to turn around. This is the defending finals MVP. This is a guy who, in about 30 minutes, I think, is going to be announced to have his third league MVP. Not many guys in NBA history have done that. Nikola Jokic is the third best player left in this year's playoffs. The only reason he's that low is because, again, some of these performances have been outright awful. That has knocked him down a peg. At number two, it is Jalen Brunson of the New York Knicks. Jalen Brunson, the second best player left in this year's playoffs, and here's why. I'm about to do a Jalen Brunson segment as soon as I get done right here with Bryce's Best 10 with some of the stats that are mind-boggling on what Jalen Brunson's doing. But just over the duration, of the six games that Jalen Brunson's played to start these playoffs, he's averaging 36-8-4 on crazy efficient shooting, and again, is doing so with outstanding numbers in the fourth quarter clutch situations of these games. Just the other night against the Pacers, dropped 21 points. 21 in the fourth quarter against the Indiana Pacers. Listen, this is a guy a lot of folks, myself included, a year ago, criticized Mark Cuban, criticized Nico Harrison of the Dallas Mavericks and said, hey, why didn't you bring him back? Well, in hindsight, it's kind of like, well, Jalen's a ball-dominant player. Luka's a ball-dominant player. I'm not sure Jalen would have been able to reach his full potential unless he was in a situation like the New York Knicks, where it's Villanova galore. It's Josh Hart. It's Dante DiVincenzo. It's these guys around him. These good shooters. Again, OG Anunoby, Miles McBride. Like, good ancillary role players and an excellent head coach in Tom Thibodeau, who still plays this minute players too many minutes. That'll come back to bite him. Point is, though, the clutch performance, the floater, the three-point shot. Like, the guy is... I never thought I'd talk about Jalen Brunson as one of the five best players in the NBA in one-on-one get-a-bucket situations. I'm sorry. What I've seen lately, guy's scoring at will. And you can throw any defender you want him. He's scoring at will. Philadelphia tried to stop him. Indiana, who's not a good defense at all, I think he's going to feast on them, tried to stop him. Didn't work. Listen, this is a guy who's clutch. This is a guy who's a great leader, who's a smart player. Typical Villanova guy. Typical dad played in the NBA type of guy. Jalen Brunson to me right now, the second best player left in this year's playoffs. That leaves only one man and one man only. And again, we're midway through the playoffs. We'll see if this changes. But as we see here today, the best player left in these NBA playoffs is Anthony Edwards. Absolutely. Anthony Edwards, the best player left as of right now in this year's playoffs. And here is why. So let's pump the brakes on the Jordan comparisons. This is, you know, worst case, the second greatest basketball player who ever lived. That said, how about 32? Can I interest you in 32-6-5 on his incredibly efficient shooting, great shooting for the field and from three and from the free throw line? Now listen, this is a guy who is, he is there to take, again, this is this comparison I do kind of get to Jordan, to Kobe, to other guys of this sort of ilk. This is a guy who's ready to come in your building and absolutely rip your heart out of your chest. That is what Anthony Edwards is here to do. It's a guy who is, who's got a bag on offense, a great handle. Again, is an explosive finisher at the rim, good in the mid-range, excellent three-point shooter. He's really, really worked on his three-point shot. I give him a ton of credit for that. He can lock you up and lock you down on the defensive end of the floor. Listen, the leadership quality is there. Again, we talk about faces of the league. I think there's been seven, I said this a week ago, since 1984, seven faces of the league since 1984. Magic, Bird, Jordan, Shaq, Kobe, LeBron, Steph. Guys who have the charisma, have the swagger. They got to have the game. Otherwise, you can't be the face of the league if you don't have the game. The MVPs, the championship, that's what all those guys have. Anthony Edwards doesn't have the MVPs of the championship yet, but the league is desperately searching for that American-born player. And listen, there is an advantage in a North American league to be an American-born star. Even if you're a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you come from Canada, that still you know, counts. But the league's looking for that big personality to kind of take the mantle as the face of the NBA. It's weird to have a guy in Minnesota threatening to do that, but Anthony Edwards, given his playoff performance this year, his continued growth and improvement over the last few years in the postseason, and by the way, he's 22. That's the scary aspect. He's not even close to his prime. We'll see this kid continue to get better, continue to get more opportunities, and who knows? A championship could be in his future as soon as a month from now. This kid's special. He's got everything you want in a superstar player. Anthony Edwards, the best player left as of right now this year in the NBA playoffs. There you go. Let's go back over the list. From 10 to 1, I've got Cap, Jaylen Brown, Spida Mitchell, Kyrie, SGA, Tatum, Luka, Jokic, Brunson, and finally, Ant-Man Edwards. That's my top 10 players left in this year's playoffs. I'm really looking forward to Knicks Pacers night. I think that tips off at 8, so about a little less than an hour from now from when we're doing the show live. Knicks are a 4.5-point favorite. I pick Knicks in 6 for the second straight series. I'll go Knicks in another nail biter. Like, it's the Knicks have won every single home game for the Knicks. Feels like every game for the Knicks outside of, I guess, game 3 against Philly. Every single game for the Knicks has been tight. Certainly every game at Madison Square Garden. And the only one the Knicks have lost was when they absolutely butchered the last 20 seconds of that game. And Tyrese Maxey hit 2 amazing shots just to send that to overtime. And the only reason it even got to a game 6 for me to be correct on Knicks and 6. I can thank Tyrese Maxey for that. But that's what we're seeing right now. This is a team that closes well late in games. And I want to talk about Jalen Brunson for a second before we get out of here. So Jalen Brunson is such an interesting story. So he plays in college. He's not a one-and-done guy. He's a typical Jay Wright Villanova dude. 3-4 years in college, if I'm not mistaken. Played with DiVincenzo, who he's teammates with now. Played with Josh Hart, who he's teammates with now. And is the ultimate quintessential point guard. And is also the 2024 quintessential point guard. What I mean by that is people get stuck on the, hey, Steph Curry can't be the greatest point guard ever because he's not really a point guard. As classically defined, he's not. He's not ever be a guy who averages 8-9 assists a game. But as the point guard is currently defined, yeah, he's a point guard. He's got the ball in his hands a lot, initiates the offense, even when he doesn't have the ball in his hands. Like, that's what is amazing about Steph, what he doesn't get enough credit on. He makes the game of basketball easy for his teammates. By, again, his gravity without the basketball. Draymond Green's critical in that role as well. But Jalen Brunson's got a little bit of both. He's got a little Chris Paul and he's got a little Steph Curry. The ability to get his own shot at any point, anytime he wants, but also get my teammates involved. Get DiVincenzo. And I was going to say Mitchell Robinson, but he's injured. He literally just might miss the rest of the playoffs. Get Josh Hart involved. Be able to come up with these clutch buckets and clutch situations. But Jalen Brunson is having one of the greatest stretches, scoring stretches that we've ever seen in playoff history. We can show you a couple stats here. Guys with 4 or more playoff games of 40 or more points. Here are the guys. You see them on the screen there on YouTube. We can show you, though. I'll read it to you for the podcast audience. Four straight playoff games of 40 or more points scored in the postseason. Their names are Jerry West, who did it 6 times, Bernard King, Michael Jordan, Jalen Brunson. Here's another stat. Okay. These are guys with 200 or more points in a 5-game span of the playoffs. Elgin Baylor, Wilt Chamberlain, Jerry West, Rick Barry, Bernard King, Michael Jordan, Allen Iverson, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Jalen Brunson. If we talk about superstars in the National Basketball Association, it's hard to argue that he's not. I mean, do we look at this Knicks roster and think, loaded? Yeah, that's a surefire. They are absolutely going to beat Boston. Now, I think they could get Boston fits. I would pick the Celtics, but I think it would be a fun, tough, gritty series. I've been a Knicks believer all season long. I've said all year long, if they get the 2 seed, I think they're going to the conference finals. But if you look at New York, you look at the roster, you're not, holy cow, my gosh, look at the stars. It's this little point guard from Villanova who is you can't really explain it, but gets whatever shot he wants at any time down low in the mid-range in from the three-point line, gets his teammates involved, doesn't turn the ball over, is clutch. He's the driving force of this Knicks team. I think it's hard. Again, if you look at, and I'll do a top 10 players. You saw me right there. I think Brunson's the second best player in the NBA and still left in the playoffs, even over Jokic, or at least has played better. He's played better than Jokic this year in the postseason. But if you discuss the bottom of the top 10 and then the top of 11 through 20, I think he's better than Devin Booker, Damian Lillard, who I love. Yeah, I think he's better than Jalen Brown. I think, throw out another name. I'm sorry. I'm dead serious. It is a discussion. Brunson, Embiid. First of all, he just beat Embiid and outplayed Embiid. He's more reliable than Embiid. He's significantly clutcher than Embiid. He's won with less, far more than Embiid. I don't know. We've seen it. I mean, heck, we've seen it for three straight playoff runs. You say three. Wait, one of those runs was in Dallas. Yep. First three games of the playoffs. First three games of the playoffs. Remember, Luka Doncic is out for the first three games against the Utah Jazz the first round 2 years ago. And Jalen Brunson put the team on his back, had some 40 burgers in there, led them to a 2-1 series lead. Then all of Jalen Brunson, Dallas probably loses that series before Luka has a chance to come back. And the reason that's significant, they got to the conference finals and upset the Phoenix Suns, the one seed Suns, in order to get there. We saw him a year ago take out a Cavs team that, in theory, was more talented, but Brunson was the best player in the series by a long shot. And then the Heat series, a team that in Miami, they got to the finals, a couple games there that go either way. The Knicks weren't able to finish them off. Every game the previous series was go either way. Brunson was better than Embiid. Brunson was better than everybody on the floor. We saw that too in game one, dropping 21 in the fourth quarter against the Indiana Pacers. And again, I think he's going to continue to feast on Indiana because the fact that Indiana is one of the worst teams defensively in basketball. So this will be high scoring games in the series. Again, I still think it goes six. I think the Knicks win tonight. Pacers win the next two. Knicks win the last two to win the series in six, advance to play the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals. But what Jalen Brunson is doing, the significance of this offensive streak, we'll see if he continues to deny. That to me is a fun story to keep your eye on. But if you replace Jalen Brunson with De'Aaron Fox, who, again, I love De'Aaron Fox, they probably get past Philadelphia. First of all, forget Philadelphia. Do they win 50 games with De'Aaron Fox? I mean, the Kings were, oh my God, the Sacramento Kings last year. They didn't win 50 games. They got bounced in round one by Golden State. A beat up Golden State, a mentally fractured Golden State. You got a kid out of Villanova. Mavs didn't want him. Knicks say, hey, you can come in here. You can come in here and sort of reshape the identity of what we're trying to do. Kudos to Jalen Brunson. I've been a fan of this kid since last season. And if I had an MVP vote, it'd be Jokic, Luka, SGA, Brunson. I put him over Giannis. I put him over Tatum. Anybody want to throw it out there? And if they did a voting for MVP of the playoffs, Ant probably wins it, but it's a discussion for Brunson. I mean, who's the tougher opponent, Phoenix or Philadelphia? I would certainly argue it's the Sixers. So what this kid's doing is really special. I think we need to appreciate it. It's great. I'm going to be honest with you. It's huge for the NBA playoffs because, yes, the changing of the guard is occurring in front of our eyes, although I think it would be unwise to assume Bron's never winning again, Steph's never winning again, KD's never. Be careful. Let's not go there yet. I mean, these are still all-time legends who are still Steph's at the peak of his career, so is KD. LeBron's not quite there, but he's still amazing. But when those changing of the guard happens, there's a dip in ratings. There's a dip in interest. There's a dip in, I would argue, to a certain degree, experience and production. But for a big market team like for New York to be in the playoffs, potentially make a long run, let's be honest, we would much rather see a New York-Boston Eastern Conference Finals than a Cleveland-Indianapolis. I mean, no offense to Indianapolis. Plenty of offense to Cleveland. Nobody wants to see that. Knowing the history between Boston and New York and basically every sport imaginable, that will be a fantastic series. Boston's going to take care of Cleveland. I really hope the Knicks beat the Pacers. Nothing against the Pacers. They've had a really, really, really good season. But Brunson-Tatum, that'll be a fun battle. And I love Tatum. Love Tatum. But what Brunson's doing is truly, truly special. This is not a one-hit wonder type of situation like some are making it out to be. Like, this guy, we saw flashes of it in 22. We saw him do it a year ago, and we're seeing him do it, and then some, times five in 2024. So kudos to Jalen Brunson, and kudos to the New York Knicks. All right, that is all the time we have for today's show. Appreciate everybody stopping by, as always. Be sure to catch Carving Up Live on Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific time, right here on Twitter, as well as the Carving It Up YouTube channel and the Grid Network YouTube channel. Of course, be sure to like, share, comment. Please take 2 seconds out of your day. Hit that big red subscribe button down there. Helps the channel grow exponentially. We are trying to get to 1,000 subscribers. We got to 980 subscribers the other day. Greatly, greatly appreciate y'all's support. Let's get to 1,000 prior to the NBA Finals. Finals start in about a month. We can get 20 subscribers plus before the finals. So let's try and hit that milestone. If you have not subscribed, hey, just takes a couple seconds. Red button down there, hit it. You're part of the Carving It Up family. If you have subscribed, thank you so much for your love, for your support, for taking time out of your day to take a chance on this podcast. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate it. Please tell your friends about it, your family about it, everybody you know about Carving It Up Live, except for your sleeping cat. That I do not suggest. The storms have been going on here where I live, and it is scaring the absolute piss out of my cat. Like, I feel bad for the guy. I really do. Shout out Neyland. But tell everybody you know about it. Just don't tell everybody you know about the show. Just not the cap. All right. Pacers Knicks tonight. MVP is going to be announced in about 20 minutes. My guess is it's Jokic, and it'll be well-deserved in my estimation. But you can certainly make a case for SGA, Luka, and definitely for Jalen Brunson. All right. 8 o'clock spot tips off in about 48 minutes live here on the Grid Network. I will be hosting it. Looks like we're going to have Barry Grant Jr. of the All Even Podcast, Mike Guido of the Bi-Coastal Baseball Podcast, as well as Eric Van Letten finally coming back from the Outside the Cage Podcast. Tune in at 8 o'clock, so about 45-ish minutes from now. Tune into that 8 o'clock spot, the best sports game show in town, live on the Grid Network's YouTube channel and on the Grid Network's Twitter account. We will see you then, I guess, in 45 minutes, and we'll see you on Carving Up Live on Friday, 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, YouTube, and on Twitter. Please be sure to stay safe out there. Please be sure to take care of your physical health as well as your mental health. And please, please, please be sure to contact your local state representatives and senators to demand change for gun violence in America, no matter where you lean politically, right, left, center. It's an issue that impacts us every single day, every single one of us, every single day. And no matter what anybody on either side of the aisle tries to gaslight you on, oh, it's not a problem. Oh, there's one solution. Both are complete and utter lies. It's a layered issue that we've got to put our best efforts into and hopefully our best people into. So let's do what we got to do at the ballot box this November, certainly. But even prior to that, let's make our voices known and fix this issue because it impacts all of us. All right. I will see y'all on Friday. See y'all on 8 o'clock spot in 48 minutes. Tune into that. Stay safe out there. God bless y'all. Peace out. Jalen Brunson, man, I'll tell you what. Thanks so much for watching the show on YouTube, and be sure to go click that big red subscribe button and check out the other clips and full shows from Carving It Up Live, as well as our other incredible content creators here on the Grid Network.